Welcome to These Are Good Days and our July Rewind series, where during the last 4 weeks of July, we revisit some of our most downloaded episodes. In this episode, we talk with our guest and friend and author and America's government teacher, Sharon McMahon. Well, Ian.
I love Sharon.
I know, me
too. You know
too.
I do. I started following Sharon and going back and forth with her in the DMs when she had 12,000 followers.
I know.
And now she has over a million followers. She's a wise voice in this political climate.
Yep.
And she really is like our government teacher.
It's true.
You know, she reminds us of things that we have forgotten.
That's
like
right.
The Electoral College.
Well, I love how she can take a big concept that we see in the news and break down what's actually happening into baby steps where we can see it.
Yes, yes.
You know, what I loved about our conversation with Sharon, when I reflect on it, was she brings the humanity back to politics.
Yes,
you know, she acknowledges that we're sitting at tables and in families and in, you know, maybe it's even in your own home with people that might think or believe differently than you. And don't lose the love for those people because of politics.
Yeah. Two things that she says a lot that I love is that we agree on more than we think we agree on.
That's right.
And the second thing is facts do not require our approval. You know, facts just don't require that we approve of them.
Right, right.
Or that we agree with them. Facts are facts. She's really great. And we truly hope that you enjoy this next episode. These Are Good Days will return with new episodes on August 6th. Welcome to These Are Good Days with Leanne Miller,
Matt Barris,
and Sharon McMahon.
Yes.
We're so excited that you're here, Sharon. Thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much.
So fun.
It is.
I'm so happy
so fun.
To be here.
Hey, can you give us, before we jump into our good days and do all the things, can you give us your biography of who are you and why do we Americans love and need you right now in our life?
Yes. Who are you and what do you do?
Well, as I mentioned, I'm Sharon McMahon. You might know me from my Instagram account, Sharon Says So, but I am a longtime classroom teacher, longtime government and law teacher. And during the pandemic, right before the 2020 election, I started using some of my government knowledge to help people on the interwebs, on Al Gore's internet. And I started just answering people's burning questions that are hard to get answers to. What will happen if X? Why do we have Y? Who's the fifth person in the line of succession? What if everybody dies in a nuclear holocaust? You know, like just things that people always wonder about, but like, how do I, if I'm Googling, is this correct? Is this the right information? So, you know, that's the genesis of Sharon Says So, and it has grown into a podcast and soon to be a book and, you know, other things. But that's the gist of what I do is you can find me on my podcast or on the Instagrams.
Yeah. Can you tell us real quick, what's the title of your book and the premise? Because I'm so excited about your book.
Thank you. It is called The Small and the Mighty. And it is about 12 unsung Americans who changed the course of history. So, you know, we often think of history as being, you know, presidents and people who did things first. The first person to step foot on the moon, the first person to, you know, fly in a spaceship, whatever it is. And those are important things in history.
Right.
No question. But there have been a lot of very important things that have happened that were done by ordinary people who have never received the, you know, the statue on the side of the mountain or the, you know, the marble bust in a library somewhere. That deserve to be celebrated, and their stories need to be told. They're
absolutely
been asking for somebody to tell them for a long time. So
I love
hope
that.
Enjoy it.
And I think I'm accurate in saying this. This isn't a book about women. This isn't a book about a specific people group or a region or a culture. It is a mix of 12 different stories.
It's a mixture of different Americans and from all different backgrounds and all different walks of life who all did different things. Some of them, Matt, are teachers.
Yes. Thank God for educators.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. And your pre-order situation was like so exciting. Fun and exciting to watch. It was so great. When does the book actually come out?
September 24th, 2024. So like another handful of months. We're just
that is awesome.
Negotiating about when to record the audiobook today even. So that's on my horizon next. And
are you going to do a book tour?
I am going to do a book tour.
Okay. Yes. Come to Ohio. And are you reading in your voice?
And am I reading in my Minnesota accent? Am I being like, hey guys, welcome back to
love
my channel.
History.
This is such a good book. I hope you're going to love it.
You can't put it down.
Put it, get up on the roof, drink a pop, listen to my book.
But it's listen, I do so want to hear good. You read it. I do want to hear your voice.
I do too. Yeah.
Is it you? Do you? Can you tell us yet?
I am going to read it. I'm not going to read it in my, I mean, I'm sure my accent will slip in there, but I'm not going to.
Listen, don't you know? Don't you know it will?
I'm not going to be too obnoxious at all.
Okay. That's awesome. Before we get too much further, like you said, I want to know, what is your typical day like, Sharon? What is, what is your typical day look like?
That's a good question. It varies a lot. It really does. It varies so much. Right now I'm in a ton of book meetings. So there's a lot of meetings related to, you know, publicity, marketing, book tours, audiobook, copy edits, cover design. So right now there's a lot of moving pieces related to meetings about my book. And also a lot of time of me spending time with the manuscript. Like today I have been finishing up the final, like it's been copy edited. So I've been going back through the manuscript and making sure that I like agree with all the copy edits or making changes.
Yeah, it's important.
But it usually starts, you know, pretty early in the morning. I have kids to get off to school and I have a team to lead and they all are waiting for me to check in with them before they sort of get started on their days. So it usually starts with checking with my team, getting my kids off to school, seeing what kind of news stories have developed overnight, getting up to speed, especially with things overseas that happen over in the overnight hours, previewing what's on the agenda for the day. So it's a lot of time spent looking at a screen. It would not be very exciting to an outside observer. It really would
like,
not.
Bring your daughter to work day wouldn't be fun.
No,
bring your child to work day. You're like, Mom.
All the seniors that want to shadow people.
For all they know, you could be playing Tetris all day.
I know, exactly. Just shopping at Nordstrom, adding to cart. That's all I'm doing all day. Yeah, I have a reporter from a newspaper who is coming in a couple of weeks to sort of follow me around. And I'm like, but it's going to be boring.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to write a profile of me. I'm like, are you going to just sit in a chair watching me sit, look at a screen? This is not, I'm not Beyonce. I'm not trying on, rhinestone bodysuits while getting my hair blown out. You know what I mean? Like,
you can always have 5-year goals.
That's right. You might not be Beyonce today.
That's right.
But come
back
in 5 years and we'll see where you are. No, no. You know, but yes, the point is that it doesn't look exciting to the outside observer.
Yeah.
But I really do. I'm very busy throughout the day.
And I want to say, I am just, before we jump into everything, I am just so thankful for your voice in the world. 2020 was such a hard time. And I think to find people that bring facts and balance to the force. I'm just thankful for people like you speaking into our lives.
Thank you.
You're kind of, you are America's government teacher.
Thank you.
It's true.
And I think you should wear that as a badge of honor.
Yeah.
So thank you for what you bring to internet spaces in particular. It's really important.
Thank you.
I actually follow all sides because of you. So I love reading their updates.
Yeah, that's good.
So,
well, which leads to a great question that we have. Let's just jump in. Because you mentioned your team and you mentioned...
We didn't tell our good days yet.
Oh.
We didn't... We do every time.
Okay. But just let me ask
this. Okay.
You mentioned having a team and you mentioned looking at a screen. Do you... Is that go with like research with fact checking to make sure that what you're putting out there, because I always feel like everything you're putting on your Instagram is very well researched and very well thought out. It's not like you're like, just having a cup of coffee, running out the door, taking the kids to their sporting events while typing your status on, you know, in your stories on Instagram. It feels very deliberate and very well thought out, but also very researched. So do you have a team that actually helps you fact check?
If necessary. Okay. They can. Sometimes we will, you know, sort of divvy up. If we're trying to find, for example, we're trying to find the latest economic numbers of like what is the current GDP year over year growth versus what is the current, unemployment rate, et cetera, where we're trying to pull multiple pieces of information together into one cohesive, for me to post in one cohesive story. It can be super helpful to have people who go actually to the source and find that info, because that kind of stuff can take a while to look up, right?
Yeah.
To get from an accurate source and not just Google it and then take the top Google result and like whatever it says is what it is. That's how people get into trouble sometimes.
Yes,
so
yes.
Finding going to the source of the information and finding it, especially when you're talking about statistic heavy information, can be super helpful. But one of the things that I always make sure to do is, especially if I am talking about a topic that is very hot button, very fraught on the political stage, is I make sure that I am getting it right by confirming the information from multiple sources.
Okay, that's good.
I don't believe in like, well, so-and-so said it, so it's therefore consequently always true. That's how people get into trouble, is just having their one, you know, oh, well, you know, Bob said it and everything Bob says is the gospel. Well, no, you know, Bob is a human just like we all are. We're all prone to make mistakes. So it helps mitigate against that issue.
That's good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, why don't you share your good day first?
So just any good day that I've ever
had?
Any good day I've ever had?
Well, recent. Pretty, let's say we usually do within the last
week or two.
Week or two or three.
Man, okay. You put her on the spot to go first.
Yeah, I did.
My favorite version of a good day is a weekend where I don't have to like vault out of bed to, start pushing people out the door and getting started. And there is nothing I enjoy more than getting up in the morning before everybody else is awake. And it's still like just the early dawn is starting to rise. Making myself a cup of coffee and sitting by the fire, working on my needlepoint. That is my idea of a great day.
Yes.
Listen, I picked up hand embroidery 2 winters ago.
My wife
and I did it together.
You did.
Oh, my word. It's so relaxing.
I love it. Yes. And of needlepoint is a form of embroidery, just like cross stitch is a form of embroidery. And there, there's a variety of different types of embroidery. But I just love it. I'm
that
very good
amazing.
At like fiber arts handcrafts. That's always been like a thing for me. And so I love to needlepoint.
I'm DMing you a picture of something that I made.
Yeah.
Because I just want my government teacher to be
Gold
proud
star.
Of you.
Yeah. Listen, Gold you're going to be trying some of these Are Good Days coffee blend because it's coming to you, Sharon.
Oh, I'm excited. We want your
feedback. Okay,
I'll
Matt, what's
you.
Your good day?
All right. My good day is our days start early in my house too. We have 3 kids under 4th grade. My wife is a junior high special ed teacher. I work in education. And so we're out the door early. But, there's nothing. I was thinking about this the other day. My daughter just turned 4. I have 2 boys and a girl, and she's our youngest. And there's something really special. Because my wife and I worked in education, I was like, boys and girls, they're not that different. I'm not going to have a different connection. Lies. She has me wrapped around her little finger. And so the other morning, she just crawled up in bed and she was like, Daddy, did you sleep good? And we just laid there and talked in the dark at like 5:30 in the morning. And then when my wife's getting ready for work, I love watching her with my wife. My wife is very makeup-y, hairy, clothes-y kind of lady.
She's not hairy.
No, not hairy, but she loves the hair stuff. She does her hair. And so it's just so fun watching her want to be like my wife, because like I kind of like my wife. So
yeah, right.
If my daughter grows into a version of her, I'm like, oh, I gotta be okay with that. So she's in the very much of mimic mom kind of stage. So I kind of relish those moments because I know it's not going to last forever, you know? So.
Okay. My good day is pretty ordinary, but it's a good day. Here in Ohio, much like Minnesota, we have a long winter. And when spring breaks forth and it's so green and so beautiful, the other day the sun was shining. It was gorgeous. I had laundry going. I had just vacuumed. And I'm like, I'm going to go put the top down in my little bug. I have a little convertible bug. And I'm going to drive 30 minutes to my favorite greenhouse. Not necessarily with the intention of buying any plants, although I did buy ferns for my swans on the front porch. And I bought bird seed and I just walked the aisles and looked at all the green and got back in that little convertible and played Beyonce and Pitbull and had just a great hour and a half of just enjoying the sun and the weather. And sometimes I think we forget to notice those things. And it was just a good day. It was a good day Absolutely. To be out in the weather.
Well, Sharon, one of the things that we admire and appreciate about you is the way that you have navigated sometimes tumultuous topics that bring up a lot of emotion. And so really what we want to talk to you about today and in the rest of our time together is really, how do we maintain relationships when our political views can differ, you know, across the board? And so really I just want to throw it to you just to kind of kick it off for us. I don't want to talk a whole lot because I know we want to hear what you have to say, but what does that look like for you? And how do you think we can do a better job at navigating, maintaining really close relationships when we differ so much politically sometimes?
It's a very challenging topic. It's a topic a lot of people ask me about because it's a topic that a lot of people are struggling with right now. So if this is you, you are not alone. It doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. And let's start with the premise that this is a relationship you want to maintain, right? Some people are in abusive relationships and we shouldn't be encouraging people to stay in like an abusive friendship.
Right.
So let's start with the premise that this is a relationship that's very important to you and that you want to remain in. One of the first things I can encourage you in is to find agreement everywhere you can, rather than looking for differences, which is, I think, often a posture that we tend to adopt. It's like, yeah, well, I like so-and-so. I don't agree with everything they say, but I do. I like them, but I don't agree with everything. Like we are, our brain is very adept at looking for pattern disruptions, right? It's very good at finding the difference between things. So our default position is often to find areas of disagreement because those pop to the top of our minds first. But I would suggest looking for the opposite, ways and places in which you can agree. You might, for example, have different perspectives on what we should do to solve the problem of undocumented immigrants coming across the border. How should that problem be dealt with? You might disagree with somebody about your perspectives on that issue. But what you can both agree with is this idea that we want safe and prosperous communities. We want human rights for everybody. We want people to live in places where they feel safe and welcome. Those are areas that we can all agree on. And so if you premise a conversation with, I totally agree with you. I think we all deserve to have safe and prosperous communities. And that's a really important goal to work towards. Starting from that posture of agreement automatically disarms the other person. They go in thinking this is going to be a battle and they've been, you know, like donning their armor. And when they find that you're actually like, I agree with you. That's right. We should have that. It kind of sets them back on their heel a little bit. It makes them less prone to be aggressive towards everything else that might follow. So That's the first thing. The second thing is something that I think most people already know, which is it's not so much what you say, it's how you say it. Right? Like this is just, it's just true. It has always been true. It remains true. Something said with kindness, warmth, empathy, and love is just received very differently than something that is said with antagonism and animosity. Mm-hmm. You can say the exact same thing in two different ways, and one will be, you know, like, yeah, I disagree, but it was a good conversation. That can be the end result versus like, I hate that guy. You know,
right.
And it's really, it's so much how you say it.
Yeah.
So I think also acknowledging the emotions that are behind what somebody says goes a long way. Saying like, I can tell that this is a topic that really weighs on you. I can tell that this really means a lot to you. Help somebody feel like they're being heard. Because, you know, we tend to not listen to other people until we feel heard ourselves. Mm-hmm. We tend to not be open to listening until we feel like somebody understands our position. And so saying things like, I can really tell this is an important topic. I can tell this concerns you. I can tell you've had a bad experience with X, that this is something that's top of mind for you. It makes somebody feel like you actually are listening and you care about the issues that matter to them. And when people feel like you don't care, when people feel like you aren't listening, it's a little bit like being a parent. Sometimes you say something 40 times in a row and nobody is listening. And then your voice gets a little louder and a little meaner. And you're like, mm-hmm. Did you hear what I said? You know, like you begin like taking up the tone of voice. I said to do it now. You know what I mean? Like it's a natural human emotion when you are feeling not listened to begin to increase the intensity of the way that you communicate, to make yourself understood. And so, you know, think about how different it would be in your home or your classroom if a child was like, I hear what you're saying and I am absolutely going to put my shoes away, but I just need to run to the bathroom really quickly. That would be a completely different conversation than them just ignoring you, right? Like it's the ignoring that is like so annoying. Mm-hmm. So just not ignoring their concerns has such an impact to be able to defuse a conversation. Don't ignore their concerns. Even if you feel like, well, that concern is sometimes people's concerns are stupid. Like, why are you worried about that? Why are you worried about the moon being made of green cheese? We have much bigger fish to fry. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like your concern is so stupid. But nevertheless, it is important to them. Mm-hmm. And you are not going to talk them out of something being important to them by belittling them.
Absolutely.
The concern is not going to dissipate because you made them feel dumb.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that is regardless of if their concern is stupid. I'm just really worried about the invading Martians from the green cheese moon. Like even, I mean, assuming we're not talking about somebody who's truly, truly delusional. I'm just using this as a silly example, right? The concern is very real to them. What even if you think their concern is silly. So those are a few things that I like to keep in mind about like the tone, making somebody else feel heard, even if I ultimately don't change my mind. You know, I always like to say that listening to understand doesn't obligate you to agree with somebody. We sometimes feel
that's
like
a good word.
Just hearing somebody out means that you are going to be forced to change your mind at the end of the conversation. And that's just not true. You know, like you think about your own spouse. When you are in the middle of a conflict, which are inevitable in human relationships, it's actually not fun to have absolutely no disagreement on things ever, because that is just like, what am I talking to a Barbie doll here? Like, this is not fun. Is this a Disney animatronic? Yeah, that's not a Disney animatronic is not a fun person to have a relationship with, right?
Sharon, did you know that I love Disney?
He loves Disney.
I love that you brought Disney to this.
I Disney has some good animatronics, Matt, and some animatronics that are quite questionable.
Agree. Totally agree.
What are we doing? Why?
I agree.
Why are some so good? Like the animatronics in the the Pandora ride in Animal Kingdom are out of control amazing. And some of them are like,
we're doing the same thing. It's so true.
Anyway, animatronics. Okay.
Since we're talking about Disney animatronics, I'm sure you've seen the American Story and the American Pavilion at Epcot.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And when Mark Twain's talking to Ben Franklin.
Yes. Oh,
such a good little show.
It's a good little show. It's a good place to get out of the heat.
It's so true. So tell me this. Do you truly believe that Republican, Democrat, and Independent, we all have more in common than we don't? That we truly have more in common with each other? Because if I am one of the aliens coming from the green cheese moon and I come to America, I would think, oh my word, these people are incredibly divided. You know, if we just read salacious headlines, I would think this is the most divided place ever. Do these people have anything in common? Do you think we are actually do have more in common than we do disagreements?
The studies demonstrate that we absolutely do. There's a vast amount of hidden consensus that gets no attention because, again, what does your brain look for? It looks for differences, for pattern disruptions. It looks for things to be afraid of.
Yeah.
And when you can monetize something to be afraid of, that's how you can convert people's eyeballs, right? You don't turn on CNN in the morning to hear about the firefighters rescuing a kitten from a tree. That's not true. What your brain is looking for. Like, what do I need to be afraid of? How do I mitigate against those fears? Who is the enemy? How do I protect myself from the enemy so they don't take my stuff and kill my kids and whatever it is?
Yeah.
Our brains are absolutely hardwired to look for that information. But what social scientists have found is that there is a vast amount of hidden consensus between us where on the overwhelming majority of issues, we have similar viewpoints on the right and on the left of, you know, somewhere between 70 and 80% consensus on the vast majority of issues, depending on what it is. But the perception of consensus, if you ask Republicans, how much consensus do we have? Or if you ask Democrats, how much consensus is there? There's a perception that we only have 10 to 20% consensus.
Wow, that's fascinating.
But in reality, we have 70 to 80% consensus on a variety of topics.
Wow.
So what gets the attention are the areas of where there's a lack of consensus. That's what gets the attention because that's what people are inherently interested in. It's not actually very newsworthy to be like, we all agree that we should cut our lawns on Wednesdays. Like that's not that interesting to read about. You know what I mean? What's interesting is Matt thinks that he should never have to cut his lawn again.
Right.
Well, now I'm interested in who is Matt and why is he such a big deal? You know,
exactly.
Now I'm paying attention. So that's just how news works. News has to, it has to be something new, right? Like that's the definition of news is it has to be new. We're not going to repeat the same thing over and over and be like, we agree. That's not a news story.
if you are thinking about directing people to resources that are across the board good, across the board accurate. Like maybe they don't all agree, maybe they don't all say the same thing. What are those news outlets or what is some of that information you would direct people to? Because what I feel like I see, especially my age and older, I'm 55.
Ding, ding, ding.
I feel like I see a lot of people being loyal to one news outlet. Mm-hmm. They watch one news outlet all the time. If you walk into their house at 5:30, that news is going to be on and it's going to be on all evening long. They're not going to move from it. And every other news outlet is liars, cheats, and thieves. Yes. Mm-hmm. Can you speak into that a little bit?
You're absolutely right. And we have a tendency to do that because it makes our brains feel good. It's like scratching an itch. It feels good to be surrounded with information that we already believe. That is comfortable for our brains. Our brains want to protect us from scary things, and new information is scary. You might not be aware that it is, but it can be. So it's not surprising that that's how humans are kind of hardwired, to seek out information that supports what you already believe. How much, if you're being honest, and you are, you don't have to tell me what it is, but if you're being honest, you have probably Googled a question to find more reasons to support an answer that you already think. Why is real butter better than margarine?
Yeah.
Right.
You've like Googled the answer to some question where you want more supporting evidence for your already held opinion. Right.
Right.
We've all done it. And that is because it just feels good. It feels good in our brain. Now we have like more information about why butter is better than mud. So, you know, like that's how the news situation works too. If you are like 5:30, my favorite channel goes on, it feels good in my brain. So one of the things I like to tell people is to explore a resource that is called Ad Fontes Media. Ad Fontes is Latin for to the source. And they have a team of people, dozens of people, who review news outlets and also things like podcasts and websites for both bias and also accuracy, or I should say reliability, for both bias and reliability. That means how factual are they? How much original reporting are they doing versus just offering their opinions on, you know, why Pitbull, it should not be Mr. Worldwide, right? Like, who is he to claim he's Mr. Worldwide? Right? Like, who has bestowed that on him? Right.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Can you spell that for me?
Yes. It's Fontes, Ad Fontes Media. They have a great Instagram, but you can also find them on the web. And so you can go on there and you can see who is rated to the left or to the right. And at the top of the bell curve, you know, you can see who's in the middle at the middle. But at the top of the curve are people or news outlets that are highly reliable, meaning that it's not just an opinion news site. There's nothing wrong with listening to other people's opinions if that's what you want to do. But you can't substitute somebody's opinion for actual news, right? You know, like a news is there was a fire at 123 Main Street and 12 people were killed in the fire. And they put the fire out at 2:30 in the morning. Those are the facts of the story.
Right.
Opinions are like, that building should have never caught on fire, and the fire department is stupid, and they bought that new fire truck, and they're wasting our taxpayer money.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
That's the opinion surrounding the facts. So you want to find news sources that report a lot of, you know, have a lot of original fact reporting.
Okay.
And are sort of at the top of this curve where they are not strongly skewed towards one side or the other, and they
are
reliable reporters of facts. So I encourage you to check out that resource and see for yourself. The other thing about, I'll just mention one other thing. I'm not affiliated with them. I don't get anything for saying this. I'm just saying that I know how it works. I've asked them how it works. When they go to rate a news organization, they have a team of people who identify as ideologically left, right, and center, and they work together as a team to rate a news outlet or a podcast. So it's not just like one left-leaning person who's like, oh my gosh, so biased, it's the worst, I hate them. You know what I mean?
It's not just
one person's opinion. And I have spoken to the founder, and she said it's actually quite easy for people once they develop a criteria to agree on like, yeah, this is a right-leaning news source, or this is a center-rated news source, or this is a left-leaning news source.
Yeah.
There actually is not that much disagreement amongst, the people who work on these topics.
Who decide?
That's fascinating. Yeah. So, it's like they have a rubric that they measure
objectively. They do have an objective rubric.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. As this election rolls down the road toward us, what are some important things that you feel like we should be thinking about?
Well, One of the things that I think is very important is that no person or political party deserves your undying allegiance. That the our commitment is to democracy and our commitment is to America.
Will you define democracy for us again and tell us like we're in fifth grade?
Sure. So, I mean, democracy is at its essence. It comes from a Greek word, and the Greek root word means a government of the people. That is the Greek root word for democracy. And so there are different ways to set up democracies, but the hallmark of American democracy is that it is a government that where the power does not come from a birthright, like a king. You're not born into power. It's not power that is seized. It's not power that is seized from like, I won the war, I'm the emperor now. It is power that comes, that is bestowed upon leadership by the citizens, right? So we elect who should lead the country. We elect a president. We elect members of Congress. We elect our city council. And that is power being bestowed upon leaders from the people. So that's the foundational underpinning, is this idea that power is not seized or born into. It is power that is bestowed upon leaders by the citizenry themselves.
Yeah.
And the system that we have conceived of involves things like following the rule of law. This is not a nation of men. It is a nation of laws. That is what the founders said about it, meaning we don't just do whatever Bob says. Because Bob is Bob. Bob needs to follow the laws, and so do we. So we are not a nation that is governed by dictatorial leaders. We are a nation that is governed by laws that everyone is subject to, no matter how rich you are, no matter how poor you are. And I mean, of course we can point out flaws in the system. Of course we can point out times where somebody got away with something or whatever. That's the nature of anything that humans touch, right? Is that it's never perfect. So we follow, and this is something fifth graders can understand. We have rules. And the rules apply to everyone in this classroom.
Right.
It's not Mackenzie and Aiden don't have to follow the rules and everyone else does. No, everyone in here follows the rules, right?
Like
fifth graders can understand that concept. So we have rules or laws that govern us. We have, you know, there's a number of other, you know, things that I can bring up, but those are sort of the foundational underpinnings, is that power comes from the people and we are a nation of laws and we have fair and free elections. We don't have sham elections like Vladimir Putin, where he's like, I won 178% of the vote this time. You know what I mean? Where we just like kill all of our opponents like Putin does. We don't like, oh, shoot, he fell out of that airplane. It's really sad. You know what I mean?
Right.
That just keeps happening to person after person after person. Oh, I hate it when they go missing in Siberia. Oh, I can't believe that happened again. You know what I mean? Like, that's literally what happens.
I mean, think about it. Yeah, seriously.
Truly. That's not even like I'm making it a joke, but that's literally what happens under Putin's watch. So we have laws, we have rules. And we don't just kill our opponents. We don't just, you know, off people who disagree with us. We have to work together to do things that matter to Americans. So if we do not have a system of democracy in the United States, it does not matter who has the best policies. It does not matter if the person promises to give you a $1 billion check. It does not matter if they say absolutely everything you want to hear, if they're the religion that matches yours, if they read the same holy book and say the same, you know, they're the same silver-tongued preacher from the pulpit as you want to hear.
Right.
None of those things matter if we do not have a system of democracy. So to me, what is more important than any policy, because every single policy the United States has ever had, ever in the history of time, has already changed at least one time or will change in the future. There is not a single policy that is literally carved into stone that we will never, ever get rid of, right? Mm-hmm. So policies are much easier to change than anything else. So we need to, in my viewpoint, if we don't have democracy, we have nothing. Mm-hmm. So it is very important that we choose leaders who are committed to the principles of democracy over party allegiance. And the people who have landed on the right side of history, as you look back throughout the sweep of the American experiment, the people who have landed on the right side of history are leaders with character. They are not leaders with the right policies. Because again, policies can change and conditions and circumstances change. But the right leader, the right character qualities, that goes much farther in furthering where we want to be than somebody who's like, here's my 10-point plan. That 10-point plan could be gone in an afternoon.
Yeah.
Right? That 10-point That's right. plan could just be a lie.
So is what I hear you saying that the character of the person is actually, you should be looking at that just as closely or maybe even more closely than the policies they want to put in place.
I believe the character of the,
okay. And then when you talk about history, people on the right side of history, when you look back, the great American experiment, who are some of those people in your mind? Like that if you were going to write a short story about this person, who would it be?
I mean, the most obvious example that historians cite is Abraham Lincoln. Right? Like he's on the right side of history. Nobody questions that. No, I mean, unless you are truly wackadoodle, right? Nobody is like, Abraham Lincoln, man, he was the worst. No, like he actually half the country hated him. They were willing to die to fight his policies. But his character that he had spent his entire life forming allowed him to be the leader that was needed in that moment and to have the moral clarity to do the right thing despite the public opposition. It turns out the public's enthusiasm for various policies, that has given us a number of very questionable outcomes. And I mean questionable very, very generously. And sometimes our questionable outcomes has meant, you know, 750,000 people dying. The public's opinion is not always on the right side of history, but a leader of high moral character almost always is.
That's
such a good word.
Yeah.
That's such a good word. So as we do look towards a very similar election that we had 4 years ago is what it's looking like at this point. I really appreciate you saying tempering your allegiance to a party or a person. What are the other things that you're like, hey, as we look towards this November and as we look towards electing another president here in the next few months, what are some other maybe perspectives you think we should take as we examine our options and as we even examine maybe our party? You know, I think a lot of friends of ours, I think a lot of people in America are just examining their beliefs in general in regards to politics. So what would you say, hey, look at these things or look at this angle? And I heard you say allegiance to a party and character of the person. Is there anything else you would add to that list?
Yeah. I mean, I always think about this in terms of who treats people the way I want them to be treated. I'm trying to think of the best way to say this. You know, if that person was in my classroom or they were the principal at a school that I was working at, which person that I'm trying to choose between, knowing that I will never 100% agree with all of their decisions. That is just the human experience. You are going to disagree with something your boss does, your principal does, your president does. They are going to have to make unpopular choices.
Right.
So you must go into it with the expectation that, like, sometimes I am not going to agree with this person. But at the end of the day, do they make decisions based from a perspective of, I truly care about you and want what is best for you, for all of us? And do I trust that they have the kind of character to make those decisions so that they become a person that I want to follow?
Yeah.
You know, the mark of a great leader is not who they put down, but who they lift up. And does this person that I'm choosing to vote for, do they lift up the people who have difficulty lifting up themselves?
That's good.
Or are they putting those people down? That has never been on the right side of history. Who you can put down has never been on the right side of history.
Ooh, that's good. I feel like I could do a case study and look through and just, yeah, that's really good.
Yeah.
Okay. I have one more question for you. Let's say we get to a place in a friendship or relationship where we say our conversations are not productive and they're actually hurtful and they feel personal. What are some boundaries you have or you would suggest putting in place in those relationships so that we can maintain relationships maybe that we want to keep? Sometimes, you know, the generation gap can be hard, or faith differences of faith can be hard. What are some boundaries you would suggest that we put in place with the person that we want to be in relationship with, but it's been really, really, really difficult to navigate these political waters? What are some tips you would have for us on how to maintain relationships with that?
There's a few things. The first thing is bring up the issue at a time when you're not actually arguing about it. You know, at a time, at peace time, that's when you want to talk about the thing, just like it is with your kids or your spouse or whatever. In the middle of an argument, and you're like, you are the worst person and I hate that you never do this thing. is the person like, oh my gosh, I have reflected, I have made changes.
Right.
Like, is that going to be the outcome? Right. You know, like, I've really been thinking so hard about the thing you said. Or if you say, listen, there's something I need to talk to you about. And I know that I would want to start by saying, I love you,
right,
but I need you to stop doing the towels on the floor thing. I need you to stop.
Right.
That it comes from a very different, that feels really different than having that conversation in the middle of it. So one thing you can think about doing, broaching the topic during a time when you're getting along. The next thing is deciding whether or not it is even worth it to have political conversations with that person. Because there is still plenty that you can talk about. If politics is all you have to talk about, then you probably don't have a ton in common, right? Like, maybe you need to develop some more, figure out what you have in common.
What other things
you can talk about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it can be something as simple as like, where are you going on vacation this summer? What is your grandchild up to? Who do you want to win the World Series? You know, like you could generate a list of 50 topics.
Listen,
easily.
And if you can't AI it, give me 50 things to talk
go
about.
Go on ChatGPT. Well, what are some questions I can ask my 87-year-old grandpa?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. And also, I think there's a place where you say, I love you. I care about you. I want to maintain friendship and relationship with you because you are my grandmother or whoever the person is. But we have to stay away from this topic.
Yes.
Because I'm not going to move. You're not going to move. And it feels like it's eroding our relationship in some ways. I think sometimes that is also an option that maybe just needs
absolutely.
To be said.
It's completely an option to say, I want to talk to you about your pie recipe because you make the best pie crust. But I am opting out of conversations about the election this Thanksgiving. Because you cannot dictate what somebody else does, but you can dictate what you will do. And
correct.
You can let them know what you will do. I am opting out of conversations about the election. It's for my own mental health. I love you and I want to spend time with you, but I'm just letting you know that that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's good.
And the boundary is not controlling what other people do. The boundary is telling other people what you are going to do.
Absolutely.
If the boundary is crossed. A lot of people don't like upholding their own boundaries. They get mad when other people broach their boundaries, but then they do nothing to actually enforce them. They get mad that other people haven't just gone along with it, right? What if, Matt, my boundary is you're going to give me your whole paycheck, okay? That's my boundary, Right? Like, is it actually, you're like, sorry, I make $8 per pay period. I'm a teacher. No, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I can't have a boundary that forces you to do something else and then get mad right. when you don't do it.
Right.
My boundary is about my own behavior. Here's what I'm doing. So that's, I mean, a lot of people have to be honest with themselves. Am I actually willing to enforce this boundary? It's like mm-hmm. kids, you're like, we're going to leave. We are going mm-hmm. home from Disney World. If you do not stop doing that thing, well, you know you're not going home from Disney World. You just paid $10,000 to get here. We're not leaving, right? So that, like, don't give your child a boundary that you don't yes. actually yes. intend to enforce.
Right.
And the same right. is true with other people. Like, if you're not prepared to back it up, don't say it.
Right. Right. It's good.
Exactly. Oh. Hey, well, Sharon, we are so thankful for this conversation and helping us kind of reframe our relationships maybe as we enter this season and just giving us tips for how to get good information in our head. I think one of my favorite things you said is that the human brain is wired to look for difference. And I think that's going to be my takeaway is how can I look for sameness and how can I retrain my brain to look for the commonalities that I have with the people around me instead of the differences.
Yeah, that's
so
really
thank
good.
You for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Hey, well, this is how we end our podcast every time.
Wait, we have to talk about food yeah, just a little bit, just a little bit. Sharon, you haven't received it yet, but you are going to be getting a box from Walnut Creek Foods and Walnut Creek Cheese and Market. And I have to tell you something that's in it that I've hand selected for you that you're going to love if you don't
okay.
have.
Okay.
I think every kitchen should have one of these, and it's an onion keeper. Do you have one?
I do not have an onion keeper.
Okay.
I knew you were a savage.
you are
what are you doing?
Ruthless.
Wrapping it up. Okay. Wrapping it in saran like a heathen.
When you cut your onion, you're going to put it in this adorable onion keeper, and what it's going to do is it's going to keep all the onion smells contained. It's going to keep it from getting slimy or wet or gooey, and it's going to make the life of the onion last longer. So you have one in your box. You
Amazing.
Have some wonderful coffee from us. Then you have some great gadgets. I went through their gadget area there. I've put some gadgets in there for you, and also some wonderful jams and jellies and peanut butter spread. Peanut butter spread is in a squeezable bottle.
Exciting.
It's peanut butter mixed with some marshmallow fluff. And my opinion is the best way to have it is on Ritz crackers. You can put it on toast. It also makes a great peanut butter and jelly, but on a Ritz cracker, it is divine.
So
we always like to give them a shout out, Walnut Creek Foods, because they sponsor our podcast, and you're going to get a lovely box from them, and I cannot wait until you get it.
Thank you. I'm so excited. I love anything. I love edibles.
Yes.
We'll keep that in context for you. Hey, well, thank you so much. We can't thank you enough for this wonderful conversation.
I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you. We end this every time with the same phrase. Whether ordinary or extraordinary, we hope you see that
these are good days. This episode brought to you by Walnut Creek Foods.